Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 22nd of August. Very nice to have you with us on this day. Hope you're having a lovely day post-eclipse. Hopefully you survived. Hopefully you kept your glasses on. You didn't stare directly into the sun.
Like a certain president.
Like a certain president.
True.
You know, there's some things that are just a gift from God. That photo is just priceless. That whole video is great. Well, anyway, hopefully he was able to read the teleprompter last night, so apparently there was no permanent damage done. Yes.
And Joe, did you notice that Melania, while he was looking into the sun, was smiling?
Yeah, although she had a quick look, too.
Oh, did she?
Only a glance.
Yeah. Well, let me introduce the panel to you for this morning. J.P. Miller is here. He's the publisher of Empire Report.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
It's a must-read. I read it every morning. The first thing I do, I open my eyes and I actually read the Empire Report.
Thank you, Alan.
It's terrific. Anything about state politics and fun, it's there.
Thank you.
You do go for those little fun stories that...
That's the goal.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Those nuggets that attract you to actually open it up.
For example, they want to take down Columbus's statue in Columbus Circle now. Can't argue against it.
He was not
a good man for the Indians, that's for sure.
Not good for the Native Americans, no.
No,
thanks for the correction.
All right, and Joe Mania is with us.
Hey.
He is our newbie. He is a communications consultant. Joe, tell us what you do in your real life.
Absolutely. So I actually run a communications firm here in the city of Albany.
With a great name. Go ahead, tell us.
Relentless Awareness.
There you go.
That's
Relentless
right.
Awareness.
Wow.
That's right.
And the type of client you will take on?
We work with the crap beverage industry, renewable energy, arenas, movie theaters, politicians, you name it, we do it. We do PR, advertising, public affairs events, you know, from small little fundraisers to Larkfest here in
Albany. So let me ask you a question. So if, you're representing a politician and his or her name comes up on the show, are we going to expect that you're going to, apple polish it?
Well, no. We usually let those things slide from time to time. But we get the calls from our clients about it, so it's all good, though.
That is good. Well, welcome. Very nice to have you with us.
Great to have
you. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's new? What's exciting?
It's all right.
You came in with, like, you had a fire under you, and now you're just like, eh.
No.
Did anybody see the eclipse yesterday? Did anybody watch the...
I did.
I saw it.
I did. It was right in the clouds,
Yeah,
but again,
clouds. You could see, but
you
it
could see
up
it.
Enough.
And we were all trying to avoid looking like the president yesterday, just staring directly up. And then, as soon as the cloud cover went away, then everybody, don't look, avert your eyes immediately. But it was something to see, certainly.
I noticed that I didn't have the glasses, and I noticed that it went a little darker, but it wasn't like you could see it blocking. And it's kind of astounding, the power of the sun. And you watch it on TV, where if you're right in the perfect line, blocks out the whole sun, but where we were, it didn't. It was still bright.
Well, I watched it only on TV.
Yeah, watching it on television was interesting because it's. I said this yesterday in the newsroom to the chagrin of some of our to our intern, but it's amazing to me of how perfectly circular it is when you look at it that way, isn't it? It's really interesting. I mean, you think it would be somewhat craggly from
something
millions
concave
of miles away.
Some way,
yeah,
right.
Right? But it's just the perfect circle.
And how is it that the moon is almost the perfect size to perfectly block out the sun, i.e. it's not a little bit bigger or a little
right.
bit smaller? Like, how is that distance
proportions
perfect?
Proportions are amazing. Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
I had a friend. I'm not going to name the sex, but I had a friend.
I think you just did.
Why?
Go ahead.
And we gave this person the nickname Moonface. Because her face was perfectly... Oh,
her. There you go.
Perfectly round.
Well, that's good.
Do you think so?
Well, as long as you're not going like the crater route.
Oh.
You see?
Who killed him?
What do you mean?
Judge Crater. Well, you have to have a little bit of a historical memory to know that this guy disappeared, was never found. This judge disappeared and never was found. It was one of the great mysteries of the 20th century. What happened to Judge Crater?
All right. Well, what happened to our discussion. Well, we'll get to that in just a second. Let me remind you. Oh, by the way, you know, I went to the this is a quick plug. I went to the Washington County Fair last night.
Ooh.
The Washington County Fair is open, and if you haven't been, you should. We were celebrating. Kelly and I were celebrating. We met each other 25 years ago at
Whoa.
The fair.
Whoa.
Yeah, a quarter of a century ago at the fair. And then we were married 2 years later. And so we went off. We went last night celebrate. I don't know. It's so hard to say you celebrate. We had a milkshake and we looked at cows. I don't know. Is that a celebration? I guess it is.
And you can, I would say so. I would say so. It merits that.
And you can and you can smell the cows.
Well, we live in Washington County, so we always smell the cows. That is the ode to Washington County. That is a beautiful smell.
Yeah.
That's better than Chanel No. 5. But if you get a chance to go out to the fair this week, it's beautiful. It's just an awful lot of fun. We had a great time. If you'd like to join us on our program panel at WAMC.org, here are just a couple of the rules. Keep your letters short, please. For God's sakes, keep them short. Send them to the right place. Don't yell at us for not reading them if you don't send them to the right place. If you send them, you know, to Detroit, then we're not going to get them. Don't include links and don't use abbreviations and maybe even proofread before you send it so Alan knows exactly what you're trying to say.
Yeah, we got a very critical letter yesterday.
It's hard to figure it out.
We got a very critical letter about my ability to read the letters yesterday.
Well, if people just follow the rules, that wouldn't be an issue. But here we go. The president spoke last night at 9 o'clock. He spoke just outside of Washington in Virginia, right near Arlington National Cemetery, talking about the future of our engagement in Afghanistan. And we didn't really learn some of the key details as a timeline or a number of troops. But he started off by talking about the importance of unity and love and respect for one another, which was very nice.
Thank you, General Kelly.
Very, very late, but very nice. Well, it's not unlike the speech given a week ago, in front of the teleprompter, right? But then who knows what's going to come 24 hours later?
Well, right? Yeah, we got Arizona tonight. He's going to go try to whip up the crowd again.
Right, and depending on what he'll do actually in Arizona tonight. Whether or not the rumors are true about a incoming pardon for former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio,
who I did not know was 80 whatever
86
86 yeah. I did not know he was that old.
Yeah, and then, or you know, does he actually go out and support Kelly Ward against her possible 2018 opponent, Senator Jeff Flake?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And then, of course, nobody in the Arizona political hierarchy are going to be there.
Right.
Not the governor, who will meet him on the tarmac, but not go to the rally, not McCain, not Flake. It certainly burnishes his credentials as anti-establishment, parenthesis, Tarianism.
Right, right.
You know.
There is an article that says nations of political split on display at Trump Phoenix visit, and basically the first line of this being Phoenix braces for mayhem ahead of
mayhem.
Where is this from? The Times?
This is AP. It's interesting that you think of mayhem in a presidential visit, especially one that is expected basically to be a campaign rally, right? I mean, this is what he's been doing. And the rally was organized by the Trump campaign. It's also a test of the president's support among his base and elected Arizona Republicans, some of whom won't show up because of the possible damage he can do to their own political standing. Outside the convention center, opponents and Democratic leaders plan protests and marches designed to highlight opposition to Trump's immigration policies. You will remember that it was the governor, correct? The governor and the it wasn't the governor.
The governor didn't like the health care plan.
No, but who was the one that said don't come?
Oh, the mayor.
The mayor.
He's
that's
a
right.
Democratic
the mayor of
mayor
Phoenix.
Phoenix yeah.
Yes, said yeah. Don't come. It's too soon, and we don't need you right now.
Right.
And in New York City, he was there last week right after he made the controversial remarks, and there were certainly protests. I think what they might be concerned with in Phoenix is that, unlike New York City, he does have a lot of very fervent supporters in Phoenix, and they do not want to see the Trump supporters clash with the Trump opponents, unlike in New York, where it was pretty much just Trump opponents.
Well, and also it was very hard to get a real read on how many people showed up in New York. All I know is if you looked at the picture, it looked like people were, you know, lined 10 blocks to the north on Central Park West. Looked like, I heard the figure 40,000. I have no idea if that's right or not.
Yeah. So is this going to be the way it is from now on, that any place that the president holds one of these rallies, that there's going to be such division, and that it'll be more difficult to hold such events?
I think certainly it could be respective of a new normal that we're seeing at least this year and at least the last couple of years.
I was thinking of this last night as I was over looking at your bio, but you've planned some of these presidential visits.
We have.
That come into Albany when the president is coming.
Correct.
In.
So last year, you know, when Bernie Sanders came to Albany,
yeah.
You know, we had handled advance work for that. And certainly there was more of a positive aspect. At the same time, I actually visited the Trump rally later that night, and you saw just like this engagement factor from both sides that you haven't really seen in generations.
What do you do when you are planning for them to come?
Well, you know, certainly looking at the security apparatus of the venue and making sure that we have enough exits and entryways of getting the principal protectee, whoever, you know, Senator Sanders in that regard. But we also try to look at how many people can we get inside the building safely. And also, obviously, what aspects in terms of the visuals for, you know, obviously it's still a media event, even though it's a public event, it's a media event at its foremost. So we look at all these different aspects, and we don't have a lot of time. You know, for the Sanders visit, we had 4 days' notice. So we got the call on a Friday. The event was on a Monday. Said, oh, can you do this? Like, yeah, we can do this.
And you work with the police, do you?
Police, state police, Secret Service, you name it. So
you said something which I just found terribly insightful. And that was that you're looking at Sanders and Trump and saying that both of them had the ability to connect.
Correct.
In a way that the, you know, the same olds have not been able to do. You want to expand on that at all?
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, they have definitely tapped into something, you know, a different sort of energy that hasn't been seen in decades here. And I think one of the things that was notable about the two candidacies is that even though you know, Senator Sanders and the president are, you know, of the upper end of the baby boom era, they're kind of really candidates for 2010 politics in regard to what millennials want to see, and also the 140-character news cycle.
So I want to ask you a question, because this has been we've gotten a lot of letters on this. Some of our panelists have claimed that Bernie could not have won. But based on the kind of outsider support there was for Trump, do you think there would have been a similar support for anything new, including Bernie? In other words, could Bernie have won?
Yeah, I think he could have won. Yeah, certainly in the states that Trump played up well, I think he could have been much more competitive there. Yeah.
Interesting.
Joe, I have one quick question, and that is, you organize these type of things and you work with campaigns to do this. With Trump and Bernie, do you think that the campaigns were maybe less organized, but because of the fervor, they were able to get more people to your event? Like, was it hard to fill the room for Bernie?
Well, I think the two campaigns were organized in vastly different ways. I think the Bernie campaign was certainly much more organized. The difference was that they really had more of a lack of resources in that regard. Whereas the Trump campaign had the resource of every dollar, but could not get their act together. But it worked, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing, I mean, from what I remember of the Bernie event, you were at the Armory in downtown Albany, at the corner of Lark and
Washington Avenue.
And you look at that. At that venue, you had people outside. He was good enough to come out and see sort of the crowd inside and the crowd outside.
Correct.
It didn't have the arena that the Trump campaign had, but it was a very hectic day in Albany.
So, do you pick the people who sit behind the president?
Good question, Alan.
Whole thing has become very interesting to watch. You know, who's behind Trump at these rallies? They're obviously handpicked, right?
They are handpicked. There is a visual behind that goes into it. It's a science. It's an art in the science in that way.
So you want people of different color, people of different sexes.
Depending on the announcement, the content of the message on that day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what could we expect to see behind Trump in Arizona?
Well, most certainly, I think, you know, depending on what they do, if it's going to be in the convention center in Phoenix.
Yeah.
So he could just have, you know, tiers of people back, you know, obviously holding campaign signs, or he can keep it simple, just have the American flag and a row of American flags behind him.
I have two questions for you. One is, well, one is an observation, the other one is a question. Because, I mean, the famous one in the Trump was a couple weeks ago where he had the individuals behind him that had signs that said blacks for Trump, and they were white.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that.
Yeah, okay. It's an interesting thing, yeah.
It seems like
yeah.
a bad optic
right.
in
right.
some way that isn't fully thought through, right. perhaps.
Bad advance, right?
Bad advance.
That's it.
But even in your experience, have you seen anything like this where we are, what, 7-8 months into this presidency and already we're having 2020 campaign rallies?
No, this is certainly different in that regard. And I think, you know, obviously when even looking at the first year for President Obama, you know, the president has the power of charisma, naturally. And, you know, certainly the power of the presidency in terms of a public role. But to see this explicit campaigning is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan has some letters. We will go to those in a minute. We're going to take a break in the meantime, and we welcome your letter. Letter. Please, only write once.
You know,
we have some people writing 8, 9, 10 times.
And then write all night long.
That's right. And, one per customer. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, J.P. Miller, and Joe Bonilla are on our panel this morning. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has some letters to read to us right now.
I'll do whatever you tell me, Chief.
Read letters right now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Everything he said pointed to fascism. Speech was fascist, says Alan. Everything he said was pointed to fascism, fear-mongering via 9/11 twice and saying terrorists 30-plus times, etc., scapegoating Pakistan, aligning the whole region as them, lifting limitations on military, declaring secrecy on military escalation / spending, on and on, and that's from Alan. Well, I think the big news of that speech was that he didn't write it, that the generals write it.
That's right.
And I think the generals are running the country. And I think what's happened is they've taken over basically the government. And I think that these generals are actually much preferable to Trump.
No, I mean, it's almost a 21st century troika, you know, between McMaster, Kelly, and I can't think of the third one right now for some reason.
McMaster, Kelly, and Trump, right?
Well,
no.
Mattis.
There we go. Mad Dog.
Yeah.
Right. Now, these guys have basically taken over running the country, and I'm sure there are a lot of people in this country breathing a sigh of relief that they have. What bothers me is once you go outside the Constitution and have the generals running the country as opposed to having civilian authority, even really lousy civilian authority like this guy, Trump, you risk the next generation of military men not being, a positive force. We saw that happen in Turkey when the Turkish military would never let things get out of hand. They always wanted a secular government until they didn't. And now you have terror. So it's not great.
I thought the reaction to his speech was interesting in that Maggie Haberman of the New York Times, who is not a fan of Trump, she's a huge Trump critic, she said it was the best speech that he's given as president of the United States. So she praised it. New York Times praised the speech. And then on the other side, Breitbart, which is run by Steve Bannon, they criticized the speech. So this may be a turning point in Trump foreign policy, even though he did focus a lot on not telegraphing the United States plans, which was something that he promised to do, and also no nation building.
So again, I want to refer you all to James Barber's book, Presidential Character, which he wrote a number of years ago, in which he says character is everything. Freud said the same thing. Character doesn't change. So now we have the generals writing these good speeches, praised by Maggie Haberman and the rest of the stuff. But you know that that guy's character is what it has always been.
Well, I think the key is going to be looking at what he says tonight, because as we saw last week, there was one speech and then another that was more to his character, and then he corrected himself again. So I think really tonight is whether or not he sticks to that same plan that he gave out last night.
Well, Joe, don't you think it's possible that he has made an agreement with these guys, with these generals, with the Troika, as we just heard, that you're in charge now? And there is every indication that they are in charge. They fired Bannon with impunity. They have been right. They have been right there. Now, tonight will be important because we'll see whether it's Trump or whether it's the Troika.
Right. So if he actually sticks to the script, then we'll see. But my feeling is that I think we're going to see his true feelings tonight, whether or not.
But don't you think he's got to be feeling somewhat happy now, this guy who has been criticized up and down by the media every single day? You're the expert, Joe.
Well, I think he's more concerned, not necessarily on the reaction from his speech, but probably the Daily News cover of the eclipse. He's probably more concerned about that.
Yeah, meaning it wasn't him.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so Jen says, though he didn't spit it right out, it's clear his intentions are to take away any regard for civilian lives in Afghanistan and tell troops to be merciless. It's a sad thought. And with Alan's statement that it's a no-win situation out there for us, as it has been for all, it just won't do much but fuel more hatred for us.
It's a very tough position he's in. You saw President Bush fail for 8 years trying to help out Afghanistan. You saw President Obama fail for 8 years. And so now Trump is going to try and do something kind of the same and kind of different. And when I heard the speech last night, it didn't seem like a Trump speech. It seemed like it was just another presidential speech kind of talking about what we're going to do in Afghanistan. And he's getting some criticism for it, but it's hard to imagine that it's really going to help the situation over there. I agree, it's untenable.
But what's so disturbing to me is that basically the point of the speech that was picked up by everybody was, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do, because if I tell you and I give you deadlines, withdrawal of troops and everything else, now you've heard me say 1,000 times on these microphones that you can't have a democracy unless people can vote intelligently, and they can't vote intelligently unless they know what's going on.
Right. There's information, there's results. Right.
So that's my problem with the thing. I mean, I get what he's saying. Believe me, I get what he's saying. But on the other hand, it is a democracy, and we have every right to know what the intentions are. If he now has the power to shift as many troops as he wants in there, that could be disaster.
Yes, and certainly not having, those sorts of measurements of success, or basically of being able to track it, he can really do anything he wants at this point.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think it's good that he has the flexibility. I think that to have a constant measuring stick by which the press is going to harangue you if one measurement didn't get put in place that you promised, I think it's good for both flexibility. It's good for him to be able to say, I'm achieving the goals that I set out, even though I didn't tell you all what the goals are.
So how do you gauge whether or not it's going to work or not?
Well, I think the president and his generals will be able to gauge, and not people in the media.
Oh, the president and his generals will be able to gauge. I see now. That is what we call fascism. It's what we call, JP, it's what we call, total control by the military or by the people who are really running the country. I mean, yeah, I hear it, but democracy is always inconvenient, isn't it? I mean, you have to tell people what they're doing so they know how to vote and how to come out.
Well, you're not going to be able to fake success in Afghanistan. It's either going to be successful or if it's not. And if he is successful by keeping some military things secret, he's going to be viewed as a very successful president.
Do you ever remember? You remember when George Bush landed the plane on the boat or the ship, and said, "We've won, basically."
Mission accomplished.
We hadn't.
One of the biggest mistakes of his presidency, and I think he admits that was one of the biggest mistakes of his presidency.
Okay. We read that one. Okay. Barry says, Indians versus Native Americans. I've known a few Navajos personally. I spent time in Canyon de Chelly, Arizona, with an extended Navajo family, and my understanding with them is they don't object to the name Indians, although perhaps it depends on whose mouth it comes from. I think that's always the case. And more importantly, the context and tone of voice. And that's from Barry. That's interesting. I mean, you know, it's a good point. If somebody, have I ever had Jewish friends who referred, you know, to themselves in a way that I would not use on the radio? Yeah. Black people have done the same thing. But woe be anybody who does it from the outside.
No, it's self-identification. However you want to identify yourself, I guess you can do that in this country. So you can do that.
Yeah. Okay, James says, in reference to the moon being the perfect size to block out the sun, it's actually only possible for a, parenthesis, relatively short amount of time in Earth's history. Millions of years ago, the moon was closer, and we didn't get a total eclipse showing the sun's corona like now. And millions of years from now, the moon will be further away. We wouldn't have a total eclipse. And that's from James H. Thank you, James H. Carol, Nurse Carol. Hi, panel. I'm hoping that Donald Trump's need to continue to stroke his own ego by continuing to hold rah-rah rallies will backfire on him when and if he attempts to run again. Well, you know, there are a lot of people who don't like this guy, Trump. A lot of people. And he's 35-36%, you know, in all of the polls. So you wonder, are there people who really hope that his numbers won't go up? In other words, let's assume for a second that he does what the generals tell him, which I think he's doing. Will his numbers go up? My answer, yes, they will. So that there are those Democrats and others who feel not about the good of the country, but, you know, we don't want to get this guy whose character we don't like elected president again because he's listening to the generals.
Well, I think, yeah, there's only one place to go, and that's currently up. I mean, or, you know.
No, he can go down.
Oh, he could go down. But I think, you know, we're at a bottom point, at least his first year now, depending on, again, what happens tonight and what happens for the next 3 years. We'll see whether or not those numbers stay the same or they will go up at least marginally for the reelect.
Well, there are a lot of people, when you say the reelect, there are a lot of people who think that his numbers, we have a game Joe plays with us every once in a while called Under Over. And we're about to, you know, see whether if he gets into the 20s from the 30s, if he actually gets that low, and that could happen now with the Breitbart defection. In other words, he could lose some conservatives now who could be yelling at him, and that would touch that 33%, which has never been touched, right?
Well, I don't think Breitbart defected. I think Breitbart will be solidly in Trump's column with a very well-funded donor in Robert Mercer funding his activities. I also read a CNN story today that his approval rating now is about the same as the day he got elected. The day he got elected, he was at 37% approval, and they even went down into the states. So the day he was elected, he had a 39% approval rating in Michigan, 35 in Wisconsin, and 42 in Pennsylvania. So
the
right
secret
now,
is...
The secret is, I think if the election were held today, he would have a reasonable chance of winning, even with these low approval numbers.
You are so, so wrong. The reason he would win today, in my opinion, is that he has energized everybody else who sat on their big fat heinies at home and didn't go out and vote. And now everybody of all colors, of all stripes, are going to go out and vote because they hate this guy's guts.
Right, but it makes a difference what states will actually come out and who comes out. So the states that JP had just mentioned, if they actually do come out and they come out the same way they did last year, then yeah, he's going to get reelected.
He's not getting reelected.
All right, let's hold it there. We got a break to do, and we'll come back with more letters. We welcome your comments, panel, at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Tuesday, the 22nd of August. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, J.P. Miller, and we also have the new kid on the block, Joe Bonilla, making his debut, and we're thrilled to have him on the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Let's go back to letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics after the news break at the top of the hour.
Okay, so here's what. Nicholas says, last night's speech. Last night we got teleprompter Trump Teleprompter Trump is not the real Trump. The words he reads do not correspond to what he personally communicates. We'll see a fine example of this at the rally in Arizona today. Well, you know, I get it, Nichols, but the downside of this letter, in my opinion, is that if you're the president of the United States, you have to make choices. And if you read the general's words as opposed to Bannon's words, to some degree, that's got to be the real Trump. Now, I made the point earlier that character will out. Sooner or later, character will out. Nevertheless, Trump has made a choice here, perhaps because of the Russian investigation, perhaps because of anything else that's going on, that he was going to start listening to the generals.
Well, I think he made a choice yesterday. And I think, you know, this president has shown that every single day, you know, we'll see how he feels tonight. He could, up until the, you know, the moment he goes out there, he said, yes, absolutely. You know, General Kelly, I'll believe anything you say. And then immediately he'll go out on stage and he'll change the script.
I often refer to the dean at New Paltz for all those years I was there. There was one guy, there was one dean. And you always knew you wanted to be the last guy in the room to talk to. Because, you know, he assured you, but the next guy came in and, or
right,
next woman came in, and there was a change. Okay, so that's good, Nicholas. Thank you very much. And Norman said, if the president mentioned the fact that one-third of the Afghan army and police go AWOL with their weapons each year, I missed it. Time to leave. That's from Norman. So, Norman, if you were sitting in the president's chair, would you leave? Really? I mean, you know, I don't like Trump, I'll be honest with you, as you probably have heard over the years. But would you leave? Would you, in fact, risk having pictures on television of Afghan women? Remember the Kite Flyer movie? Afghan women having their heads cut off. Or
Kite Runner.
What'd you say?
Kite Runner.
Kite Rider?
Runner.
Runner, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, and there was no one that wanted to get out of Afghanistan more than Barack Obama, President Obama,
yeah.
And he stayed there for 8 years. So what they say and what Trump admitted is that once you get into the seat, you see the responsibility that you have, and that's where we are.
Okay, so that's Norman. Interesting. I like Norman. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Our damaged republic. Military advancement comes with war experience, and now the restraints on the military are off with the blessing of Trump, Pence, and the Republican-controlled Congress. The military, Koch and Mercer, are going to have their never-ending wars, regardless of the reason. We are now in the age of wars, walls, and the destruction of our republic. We need to vote these people out of office, and that's from Naomi in Beacon. Okay. And Jennifer writes to the all-male panel. I predicted we'd get one of those. Clearly, basically, I'm putting that in my own. All Bernie supporters. It's interesting that you all feel Bernie would have won the election rather than an incredible, brilliant, and gracious woman. You're wrong.
All right. I believe only two people said that out of the four people on the panel.
Right? I asked the question. Okay, let's reconstruct. I asked the question. Joe answered.
We're trying to debunk the letter's premise, correct?
Yes. Joe answered the question saying
Joe Bonilla,
right.
Yeah, he thought he could win. JP didn't check in.
I didn't check
you
in.
You didn't check in, did
I
you,
did
Joe?
Not.
And I, of course, agree with Joe, but I didn't say so. I think Bernie would have won.
Well,
but only in retrospect because of what we have seen about people's need for an outsider at that moment.
I agree Bernie would have won.
Do you?
And I don't think it's even a question. I think it's almost, if you asked 9 out of 10 people that follow this, they would say Bernie would have won.
Yeah, it was the year of the outsider. And, you know, when you have somebody such as Hillary Clinton, even with all the, you know, experience and credentials, it was not the year for that, the theme. Whereas 8 years ago, that was with Barack Obama.
So Jennifer said, again, I want to read that last line, rather than an incredible, brilliant, and gracious woman, .. You're wrong. Now, Joe has specifically asked you on spelling to spell your words correctly.
don't go there.
Okay,
just,
all right.
Just don't.
All
right, that's too,
all right. I won't.
It's beneath you.
It is not only beneath me, but it is a mistake I make a lot. So to call somebody else out for it.
I'm even going to take it away from you now, so you're not tempted again.
Okay.
Put on your professorial red pen and go to town.
Ricky, you know, I don't know, for all of us who are... you have favorite things. Joe, I'm sure you do. You mark a lot of papers now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I mark papers in the old days, and I marked a lot of papers, I had one word which I used that my professors used on me, awk, A-W-K, explanation point.
Awkward?
Awk. Yeah, bad sentence construction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awk. Okay, all right. Ricky said, hi, gentlemen. If Pakistan is so bad, why aren't they on the list of banned countries? Shouldn't he subsequently do so now? I bet he won't.
All right.
Good point.
Yeah.
Well, why won't he? He won't because they have something called the bomb.
You kind of a big deal.
They
right.
got the yeah. bomb.
Yeah.
It is interesting, however.
Oh, that.
It is interesting, though, that the president pointed not only to Pakistan yesterday, but to India.
India now, was fascinating.
Now, India is our friend, and now they are, anyway, and the friend of Afghanistan's present government, and they have a bilateral relationship with that government. Now, Trump is saying, no, you have to, if I'm reading him correctly, you have to join the coalition. And you have to, you know, be under basically our command as opposed to making these deals separately with India. Interesting. I don't think they're going to like that. Jana says, Trump battle plan. I remember during the debates he said, I'll keep you in suspense in relation to whether or not he would support the Republican nominee if it wasn't him. This is a pattern that is contrary to democracy. I agree with that. That was good. Sarah's just come in with more
information. It does seem to be one of the few things, though, that he's actually stuck with, right? I mean, he said that at the beginning of the campaign. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. It's tipping our hand. It's one of the few things that he's actually, from the campaign to his presidency, has stuck with.
The theatrics of it.
Yes.
Right.
Well, I don't know whether or not he's doing it because the generals told him this makes more sense. And it may.
It's also in his interest, though. To not have a yardstick by which he's measured by, and he loves to do things in his interest.
Well, I think that's being kind.
That he thinks are in his interest.
Larry says Afghanistan discussion.
But that indicates that he had, because the other side of that is that you don't really have a plan, and you're telling people you do have a plan. I'm just not going to tell you the details of the plan, and you still don't know what the hell you're going to do.
That's possible.
And at the end, you can just declare success.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, yes, and we know that. Oh, simply keeps saying, oh, we'll take care of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's simple. Great. I created a mess, but we're not going to have a mess anymore.
Yeah, okay. Larry says, hi, panel. Oh, no, that's Deborah. I'm so sorry. Hi, panel.
Hi.
Trump didn't say anything about the plan to give Betsy DeVos's brother billions to send mercenaries into Afghanistan. Do you know the status of this proposal? Deborah. Anybody? Pass.
No.
I haven't heard of that.
No.
Okay. Don, our very good friend, Professor Don, says, dear panel member, in handing the war in Afghanistan over to the generals, Triumphs has relieved himself of any problem which might develop. If the war goes awry, he will blame the generals. If the war goes well, he will take credit. Trump does not have the patience or discipline for long-term involvement with any difficulty issue, as he demonstrated with the health care debate. And that's from Don.
So I just want to quickly, because this came on my screen, we're going to go to a break here in a second, but two former WAMCers, one not so former, but John Kroll,
yeah,
our old Berkshire bureau chief, checked in and said, of course, Bernie would have won. And Rosemary Armeo.
No.
Panelist.
What do you think the chances?
Who actually will be on the program tomorrow from, I believe, Jordan. I believe she's still in Jordan. She'll be on the panel tomorrow, and her response to that of Bernie would have won is baloney.
Yeah, she's been a well-known supporter of Hillary.
So there you go. We'll talk more with this with her tomorrow, but there you go.
Ken said, Afghanistan, Bananastan. Could anyone tell me what success in Afghanistan is? That's a very good point. You can't win and you can't lose.
Right. How do you measure it? Right. What is success?
Success is holding the Taliban back a little bit. That's what the success is going to be seen as. And to a panel from Mal. The Trump speech last night sounded like Nixon's secret plan to end the Vietnam War. We know how that went. And that's from Mao. Okay, I have a plan. And, you know, or Eisenhower, he said he was going to go to Korea. He did go to Korea, And what we're living with now is a result of Eisenhower going to Korea, right? Laurie says, that was it. Trump took off his glasses and looked at the eclipse three times. A clear message, unfit to be president. Maybe he looks at the nuclear button and can't help himself, but just do it. What do you think?
I think there are many other reasons to perhaps come to that conclusion other than
looking at the sun. Right,
yeah,
right.
But all right.
Here comes the sun. Trump's speech says, Linda, okay. One thing that stood out for me in Trump's speech last night was that he said and kept saying, killing the terrorists. The military usually speaks about defeating the enemy, and that's Linda from Hurley. And good morning, says Tracy. If the new Afghanistan strategy fails, Trump will, without doubt, blame his generals. We've heard that at least twice in the last couple of seconds. Right. Here you go, Joe. You can throw those in the...
Excellent. Thank you very much. We have concluded with batch one of the letters, which means we can safely go to news with Ray Graff. He is ready. He is willing, able, and pretty ticked off that we're a minute and a half late. We'll be right back after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel, and we have a great panel. Let me just reintroduce them at the top of the hour as we look at 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here. Yeah. We also have our brand new member of our panel, and we're thrilled to have Joe Bonilla with us, communications consultant, and J.P. Miller from the Empire Report joins us as well. Good morning. We have letters, but before we get to those, I do want to get to some other topics. We have other things to discuss, of course, so let's get to a few of those before we go back to the letters. One of the issues, of course, is the collision that took place in with the U.S. John McCain. And now we hear yesterday U.S. Navy ships worldwide will suspend operations for a couple of days while there's an examination underway to look at what happened and to consider all of the things that are protocol and that all of those things are being met. This was, I believe, the fourth collision in within a year.
It was the fourth, yeah.
Fourth in a year. So you have all of this advanced technology. So what happened? And that's what the Navy will be looking at. The Officer Admiral John Richardson, the Chief of Naval Operations, said he had ordered two major actions after the collision between the destroyer John S. McCain and an oil tanker early Monday off the coast of Singapore that left 10 sailors missing and 5 others injured. Admiral Richardson said he ordered an operational pause for Navy fleet commanders to review teamwork, safety, seamanship, and other fundamentals aboard all 277 Navy vessels. Second, the Admiral said he ordered a broader, months-long review to examine the specific problems with the Navy's 7th Fleet based in Japan, as the Navy has suffered 4 major ship accidents in the Western Pacific since February. This all comes as there is also word this morning that some remains have been found of the sailors.
Well, Joe, the one takeaway that I saw, which was interesting, I think I saw it on MSNBC this morning, was that the steering on the ship had been incapacitated before the crash. Has anybody else heard that one?
I have.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
How would the steering be incapacitated?
You couldn't, you know, you're in a, here's your nightmare. You're in a car, your hands are on the steering wheel, and all of a sudden the car's going wherever it wants, and the steering is incapacitated. See what I mean?
Yeah, so the power steering just goes, but for obviously a ship, it's a much more significant thing.
Especially a $1 billion ship,
yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
And it's also, anybody that's been on the water, it's really hard to stop when you're going. You know, a car can stop.
Right.
A boat's a lot harder to stop.
The road isn't moving.
Right.
Right.
According to the report that we are talking about, there is some concern. Officials say that it's unclear why the crew could utilize. Well, there's the actual steering mechanism, but then there's a backup steering system to maintain control.
Oh, that's interesting.
And their question as to why the backup was not available to them, and they told U.S. Navy officials told CNN that early indicators were that the destroyer experienced a loss of steering right before the collision, but the steering had been eventually regained after the collision.
Sounds suspicious.
You also wonder, what about this other ship? Why is this other ship, you know, I guess they're both in the wrong, but the other ship could have steered out of the way too,
right, you would think.
Well, that,
yes,
we're
although they are bigger,
huge.
Yeah.
The other ones are bigger than our ships.
Oh, yes. my God, yes. We're talking about oil tankers here.
Wow.
If these frigates or destroyers are relatively small compared to that. Yeah, and right. So with all the technology, with all of the alarms, with everything else, this keeps happening four times, this kind of thing. And it really has gotten to be, now there may be different circumstances, but this is really, you know, a major embarrassment. I mean, you think of, now remember, these are the above-board ships as opposed to the above-the-water ships as opposed to the submarines and the rest. I've always been interested when I talk to the excellent congresspeople, both in Republicans and Democrats, who represent Groton, Connecticut. And they will give you all the reasons we have to build these ships in order to keep up with the Russians or the Chinese or whoever the people are at that moment.
It is astounding, too, that there are 277 Navy vessels, and I assume that they're not just parked all year. They're moving a
lot.
They're
out and about.
Right, but four in a year is
and
is
that's
egregious.
That's a low number, JP, you know, because it, compared to what we used to have.
We used to have a lot more.
Yeah, we had more. And so this is going to turn out to be, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, I'm just going to mention this. This is going to turn out to be one more rationale we need to build more ships and to pay people more money to build those ships in the present war economy, which still carries this country. So many ways.
Well, it will be interesting to see more or less, you know, what will come of this, and obviously certainly post-investigation and their review. And again, in terms of the crisis communication point of view, what if there's another incident after this in the next month or so?
Sure.
And that certainly can obviously change the conversation in terms of what we will do and looking at defense contracts and things along those lines.
And then the whole cyber question here is fascinating. It was interesting that in the Admiral's declination, I don't know if that's the right word, but in the Admiral's talking about this, he said this would be a full review, including all the cyber stuff. So that, if you assume that there are people trying to get into virtually everything in the Pentagon right now, bad guys, if you want to use those terms, bad guys, you have to assume that the bad guys are not leaving our ships alone either, right?
So there's the specter of maybe someone disabled our steering.
Well, or something. I mean, you know, I'm not good at that stuff, but I'm assuming if the basic principle is you make as much trouble for the United States as possible by getting into cyber, our cyber capacity, you do that with ships as well as with on the ground.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's go to some letters as we finish up the program.
Thank you, Joe. Molly said, could Bernie have won? Good morning, and thanks again, panel, for a stimulating start to my day. Question, even if Bernie had won, what would have happened with Congress? Would he have had enough support to get his agenda through?
Well, that's a vastly different question because, you know, we would have still had basically a Republican-controlled House. We could probably, you know, we'll still have a Republican-controlled Senate. But and certainly moving his agenda forward, I think he would have had a very difficult first year.
I agree. But I think he would have won.
Yeah.
You know, when presidents get elected, they come with a certain amount of goodwill. And this guy, Trump, has squandered that goodwill. He had it. We see examples in which Congress virtually changes the rules in order to get a Supreme Court judge appointed, but he did squander it, no question about it, and I can't figure out why he attacks his fellow Republicans the way that he does. He really thinks this is The Apprentice, or you're fired, or that's the way to motivate people out of fear. to do what he wants them to do.
But that's his character. He's a fighter, you know, and that's been going back to the 80s when he was having all these fights with Ed Koch. Right. You know, that's he's not going to change in that regard.
And that's his character.
And if you watch, I think the movie is The Bronx Tale. I may have the movie wrong, but you either want to, if you're a leader, you either want to be feared or loved, and Trump is never going to be loved, and so he wants to be feared. And I think that he has to try to take out Jeff Flake in Arizona by supporting the person that's running a primary against him. If he's successful, all these U.S. senators start to line up behind him for fear of losing their seats.
I don't agree with you. I think what's going to happen is they're really going to be ticked off. They are ticked off now that he's doing this, that he's entering into their personal bailiwick. You know, what is the 11th commandment? Don't pick on somebody in your own party. Ronald Reagan.
Which Jeff Flake violated.
And, well, you say that, but I have.
Well, I mean, Trump's also violated it numerous times, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm looking at you strangely.
And out of the violations, really, is that the top one?
No.
No. All right.
And Doug says about Afghanistan, the Soviets threw everything they had in Afghan guerrillas and end up leaving in disgrace, suffering their first defeat since World War II. Afghanistan has been called the graveyard of empires for a good reason. Is this country prepared for an all-out invasion of that mountainous meat grinder? Because that is the only chance we have of winning there. Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I don't think there's any question that you're right about that. And we already tried it. How many troops did we have over there? One point or another. Didn't Obama put, was it, or Bush put 100,000 people over there?
It's like 90,000, something like that. Yeah.
Otherwise, we need to pull our troops out and blow up terrorist training camps there when they appear. Half the planet is filled with images of horror. We'll just have to get used to it. Daniel says Bernie would have beaten Trump about as well as Zephyr Teachout beat John Faso. Interesting. Well, yes, but you saw Zephyr Teachout do extremely well against Andrew Cuomo in upstate New York. So that's interesting. Okay. Gina, I always like a little joke. Gina says, of course, Bernie would have run, but Bernie would have won because Hillary's voters would have left the House to vote on election day. I believe Hillary lost the election because a fair number of Bernie voters sat on their hands.
Tend to agree with that. Yeah.
Whew, what a mistake. Elias says, when Obama ran, he promised to get rid of Iraq and double down in Afghanistan. He did both. When Trump ran, he promised to exit Afghanistan. He lied. Well, he said last night that he changed his mind. Is that a lie?
No, he certainly, you know, his feelings can change from time to time, but, you know, it goes back to what we've been talking about character, whether or not he's actually going to stick to the plan he set forth.
Exactly. Richard says, panel, Bernie Sanders is an avowed democratic socialist. Trump and his team, especially his white nationalist comrades, would have relentlessly hammered away that we cannot let America become a socialist country. Trump versus Sanders would have been outsider versus outsider, and Trump would have won, and that's from Richard. Well, we'll never really know, but I don't agree with you, Richard, for whatever it's worth. You know, Mario Cuomo used to lecture me or hector me on a number of occasions on our show in which he would make it clear that the public library is a socialist institution, as are our schools and are many of our hospitals and not-for-profit corporations. Okay.
And Bernie hasn't ruled out running in 2020.
No, but how old will he be?
He'll be 78.
So that would mean he'd be 82 when he was done being president.
Right.
That's why Chris Murphy would make an ideal vice presidential candidate for him. So Nancy, although it would be Vermont and Connecticut, not exactly a place to pull people from. Nancy says, speech. Hi, panel. The problem as I see it is we have no idea what is true and what is not true regarding anything Trump says because of his propensity for constantly lying to benefit himself. If I were the parent of or relative of a service member, I would be petrified to have this man in charge of my loved ones safely. And, you know, that works two ways. There are the parents who believe that anybody who says anything about any of our military operations in the negative are undermining their kids' welfare, right?
Certainly, I think that's part of the feeling too. But you know, you have those who, you know, there's a long line of military service in some family, public service, if you will, and they feel that any sort of attack on that is attack on the country, attack on their ideals.
Yep. Dan says, Eric Prince, mercenary profiteer. Mercenary profiteer Eric Prince, Betsy DeVos's brother, was reportedly invited but blocked from attending Friday Camp David meeting on Afghanistan by General McMaster. Hopefully, that's where his part of the story ends. Didn't we learn our lesson about contract soldiers in the Iraq War? Keep up the great informative work, says Dan from Altamont. Vincent says, if the destroyer that was damaged uses drive-by-wire electronic for steering, there's a very real possibility of a cyber intrusion into the ship's navigation system. And we heard also from Doug, who says, ship collision. I don't think this was an accident. I hope that the Navy is looking at this as a deliberative act. Doug in Stafford Springs. And Chris says, hello, panel. Paul Riley. No, that's wrong. Chris says, Chris's last name is actually Riley.
Gotcha. Okay.
Chris says, hello, panel.
Hello.
Hey.
Paul Ryan said, President Trump is getting better. He then said, this was a teachable moment for my children. If President Trump was my child, I would tell him to apologize for what he said. How is it that I'm supposed to hold my child to a higher standard than the President of the United States? And that's from Chris. That's what we got, Joe.
All right. So we only have about 2 minutes left. So the final topic that I will bring up, because we did talk about the Jeff Flake race. And so the GOP leaders, I want to get to this aspect of the stories, want Trump out of the Senate race and not to get involved. Obviously, he is already involved. So how do you dance that?
Well, here's the problem. If all of those people all those Republican leaders who are supporting Trump now come out and say, you know, stay out, President, and Flake has to win, and then Flake loses, boy, you got a problem.
Yeah, and I think certainly you look at the president being the leader of his party. So when you have these sorts of intra-party battles, it certainly is going to change the landscape. And again, we're still a year and a half away from the midterms. So what's going to happen between now and then, we'll certainly see. And I think it's something where the president's certainly, you know, going on a path of, you know, again, what he's always been doing for the last 30 years.
Jimmy?
I think it's I realize that this is a little bit of a different viewpoint, but I think that what he's doing with Flake is good for him, in his interest. And Jeff Flake happens to be one of the only Republican senators who's calling him out. He just also happens to be a guy who's up for re-election in 2018. So this is not a profile in courage in what Jeff Flake's doing. It's a profile in self-preservation. And if Trump can successfully beat him in a primary, all of these other Republican senators are going to think twice about going against the president.
Now, JP, the problem with that analysis in my mind is that you're going to motivation. I do that a lot. I mean, if I look at Andrew Cuomo, I quite frequently say, you know, what's that? He did that because, you know, something. But I suppose, to be fair, we all have to examine what they do as opposed to whatever nefarious schemes we think are in their minds. I mean, if Cuomo does something good, you say, you know, okay, it's good. That's why when he did the gun control, I wrote column after column about how the gun control was correct. I knew where he was doing it.
We are done. We're out of time. My thanks to Joe Bonilla for joining us. Thank you very much.
Hopefully you'll come back
very soon.
Thank you.
Look forward to it. Thank you. JP Miller, thank you very much for being with us. Always good to see you. Alan, thank you. And we'll be back after this short break.